Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The violence in Afghanistan, the violence in Chicago, the politics swirling around, the finger pointing, the cost, the human cost, the treasure, the disillusionment of the people. All these are threads. All these are part of a story. And for years, Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune, former editorial page editor there, and my editor, has pulled at those threads and has tied them up for you. She's our guest. Jeff Carlin is also here, executive producer at WGN Radio, master of pies, master of sound. And if you like what you hear, it's because Jeff has made it so. He is the best producer in radio in Chicago. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father, friend of Zeus the Wonder Dog, who's sitting right by my side, editor, publisher, and chief bottle washer at johncassnews.com. And we'll have a special announcement about your favorite in this podcast. With all that's going on, with the violence, the political skullduggery, the ennui, the depression, the numbness, we need some voice to cut through. We need some voice to tie it up. And that's why Kristen McQuarrie is our guest. And where are you with all that's going on? With the violence and the numbness. It starts at your toes. It starts at your fingertips. It crawls up your body. It makes you unfeeling. As all this violence and rage and anxiety hits us. Day after day after day. But there's a light on. The street might be broken. But there's a light above it. You can see the potholes and see the cracks. Just be careful how you step. Here, now, on the Chicago way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As I said on the monologue, our next guest doesn't have to worry about deadlines, doesn't have to worry about getting angry letters, doesn't have to worry about negotiating through the maze and the, I don't know, the storms of news. But she is probably one of the best news people in Chicago. Her name, Kristen McQuarrie, our guest on the Chicago Way podcast. And my friend, and Jeff's friend. Hello, Kristen.
Hey, Kristen.
Hello, John. Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm relaxed. I'm just reading headlines now, and, you know, some things change and some things never change, like the CTU-CPS standoff and the fact that the start of school is in jeopardy again. But, you know, I just get to sort of fly at 10,000 feet over these stories now. And, you know, my concerns every day are what I'm making for dinner. And
you don't have to worry about Cass being late for with his column. Yeah, that's nice.
I don't have to be like pacing at 4 o'clock, waiting for a cast column, or sitting at my computer until 9 p.m. to make sure pages look right. I do need a J-O-B, so it's not all daisies and rainbows. I am still trying to figure out what my next move will be. I hope to figure that out fairly soon. But in the meantime, I'm just sort of enjoying summer, and I hope the two of you are as well.
Well, what's Jeff doing?
Well, Jeff is still working in news outright, and it's, as everyone knows, it's insanely chaotic right now. So I'm just kind of holding on, just strapped in and trying to follow everything that's happening in the world. But you guys know that problem. So, yeah, I'm pretty much status quo. But Kristen, I mean, I've seen some of your social media stuff, and I've seen you around in some of the radio stations, if you will, in the area. And you do seem very much like Zen, which I applaud you for. But how is it otherwise? I mean, I know with the spending more time with your kids and hanging out, I bet that's got to be awesome.
I mean, it is. It's so I think my last day at the Tribune was around July 5th or 6th. And, you know, in the huge wave of reporters and editors who took buyouts, I also applied for a buyout, but was not granted one. But I left anyway, because I just knew that the task at hand was not something that I was going to be willing to do, which is basically run an editorial board with, you know, two people and still try to keep up the amount of content. And, you know, in political season, we do a lot of political endorsements, and those require an immense amount of time. And they're also really popular among readers. Some of the content that gets picked up the most and encourages people to actually, you know, go behind that paywall and pay for a subscription are endorsements. And I just knew that I was not going to be able to do what I wanted to do. And in fact, they did sort of shrink, not sort of, they did shrink the opinion section, and, you know, are doing the best that they can, but I just knew I could not do it. So abruptly I left. Abruptly, I no longer had a paycheck. And so fairly quickly trying to figure out what to do next. But yeah, just spending a lot of time at home and sort of being my kids' Uber and watching cooking shows and cutting the grass, nice diagonal lines. You have to have the diagonal cut.
You're doing a White Sox thing, huh? Yeah,
absolutely. Diagonal cut, making sure my flowers are watered. I mean, it's not been a bad summer. I'll put it that way. How about you, Cass? What are you doing? What are you grilling? How are you spending your waiting days of summer?
I've been rather busy without my editor, Kristen, to talk to every day. I've got something going on, and I'm watering grass. I'm a woman I know has, let me put this delicately, has granted me the use of part of her backyard for a garden. So I'm gardening there. There's a lot of tomatoes, and she just took some to church. And we had her philanthropic group, and they were having a meeting. So she's like, I'm bringing all these tomatoes over there because I can't handle all these. And we got into a little argument about what tomatoes she could take. I guess I'm becoming a bit covetous about my tomatoes. I don't know why, but it's been so long since I've grown some that they're all my precious now, you know. And the eggplants, nobody can touch those because she's got this great, great recipe. Vegetarian, I know that was just a bait for Jeff, but also meat-based. You take the eggplants and scrape them out and bake them with various spices. They come out of the oven looking like shoes. So they're called papuzaikia. It's an ancient recipe, probably going back thousands of years. And You know, I haven't seen that on a cooking show. Kristen, have you?
I know. I was thinking you were going to go the Ratatouille route because I have been tempted after watching a few Ratatouille cooking episodes to try to use your summer vegetables for that. So you got your tomatoes, your eggplant, your squash, your zucchini, and it's so beautiful. I'm going to try to make that before summer's over.
What are the cooking shows that you watch? Are you just YouTubing like everywhere?
You're so millennial, John, with your lingo. YouTube.
I know. It's on. Actually, let's see if he gets this one. Actually, I watch a lot of little clips on the gram. I follow Food Network and a few other cooking shows on Instagram. And so it's sometimes.
Yes, I know like what the gram means.
Okay.
Just how about checking. The talk? Do you do anything in the talk?
I don't do anything on the talk. I feel like
talk is commie. Talk is commie. Come on.
Yeah. Right,
my bad.
That's more for the little ones. But I actually still, so having worked always, I never watched daytime TV and I still think it's just a lot of it is horrid. And
who's your daddy? Who's your father? You are the father.
My gosh. You wonder about like the decline of intellect and curiosity and stimulation and critical thinking. And geez, if you're just sitting around watching daytime TV all day, I can see why, because it's awful. However, I will sometimes tune in Rachel Ray because she will take
hate her. Guts.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, what do you not like about her? And I'll tell you what I do like about her.
Well, I don't like about her is that she ripped me off in a Tribune contest.
This feels.
Yeah. Here's what happened. There was a Tribune contest to make, or as I call it now, the paper. There was a contest at, quote, the paper, unquote, to make Christmas ornaments. So, and they had like Wedgwood and all these international designers. And I took it. I did it by taking they gave you a styrofoam ball and said, make an ornament. And so I just took a black magic marker, like indelible pen, and made mine black and then used whiteout to write my love affair with the Chicago White Sox. Okay. And put a hook on it. And that was the most popular ornament until the last minute when, like, right before deadline, like, I think 11 o'clock, somebody on Rachel Ray's group made an obscene bid to put her over the top, and I lost it. It was worse than losing the Pulitzer, you know? It pissed me off because, you know, I really don't think much of that other award, but I do think a lot of about ornaments, and it just frosted me. So I don't like her. Okay.
Are you is sure that, this was, what, did this really happen or is this a dream? Did you dream this up and it's one of those things that you can't quite
always the match editor
with reality?
Why don't you look it up? You know, why don't you look it up and put a link in your comments?
Okay. You know, I shall.
If you want, I'll do it now.
Yeah, I need to fact check you on this. This is not scaring out why Rachel Ray would be part of a Tribune ornament contest, but okay.
I don't like her because she's everywhere, and I just can't get away from her. I mean, I don't have any lack of respect for her because she's, you know, self-taught, and she's got a really cool idea of like, hey, I can make anything in your kitchen. Just give me what you got. So I applaud that, but she's just everywhere. I mean, you go to the Jewel and they're pushing all her flatware and all her stuff. And you go on TV, for a while, it was just like she was everywhere and it just drove me insane. That's, you know, it's like a song you hear over and over and over and you don't like it anymore. That's just my take on her.
But
I get it. I don't think she's particularly personable. And I think she's gotten worse, like the more famous she's grown. During COVID, she's been doing all of her filming at home with her husband, and she's really bossy. I mean, she bosses him around. She humiliates him every now and then. So I don't tend to really like her personality anymore. I used to. But let me tell you what I like about her is that while she's cooking something as simple as chicken breast and mashed potatoes, she explains how things work. I mean, I never knew what type of oil to use to make meat versus something fried versus, you know, just topping something with like EVOO. So she has taught me basic tips like that as someone who really started cooking only about, I don't know, 10 years ago and was really from scratch. You know, I would put chicken breast in a cold pan with a spray of Pam and like throw barbecue sauce on top of it and think that was actually tasty. So that's what I like about her. But I know she rubs people the wrong way.
Especially John Cass.
I'm not going to say anything now because I'm looking through Google and I can't find that column. I know it pissed. I can't trust them. I don't know what they keep anymore. You know, I mean, for a while I was, for about a month after I left, I was still I was still subscriber favorite, you know, so I can't really, I just tell you that it happened, and I will call Tom Rabarchik, who was my leg man at the time, now a federal prosecutor in California, to the witness stand, so you can impeach him.
Okay. Yeah, it is one of the severe downsides of leaving the Tribune is losing access to the morgue, which is all this, you know, history of every news story dating back to, I think, 1984. Yeah. You're just not going to find all that stuff on Google. So I hear you. I will take that into consideration.
But enough with your Rachel Ray love. I would just offer, what about Nick Stellino? What about Nick. what about Lydia? You know, I like Lydia because I like hefty cooks. I happen to be a hefty cook, and I reject the skinny cooks because I don't. I always think of them spitting out their food when they taste it. Like who's that? Like Giada? You know, like Giada. Perfect size. What is her name? Size zero. You know.
Yes, I know. I did. I think her people pushed back on that story, but yes, there was a story that Giada, to stay a size two, would put the food in her mouth for the camera, and then she had a spit cup where she'd spit it out. Like, so tobacco? I know I like,
yeah.
Right, I know, how distasteful. Ugh. I like Lydia, and is Nick the guy who's on the show The Kitchen with her?
No, I think if you put Lydia and Nick in the kitchen, Nick would be killed.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
He's got a PBS show. That's why I catch him. But it's like you coming into a dinner party with him, and he's very boisterous and tells fun, silly stories, and he's very personable. And his passion is awesome.
I also love Aki on the tube or whatever on YouTube. And, Dimitra's Dishes. Those are my go-tos. I wish Carrie Nahabedian had one.
I was just thinking that too.
You know.
Can I tell you what I just ate before we zoom? And I'm just going to apologize in advance.
Right, for grossing us out? Okay.
Yeah, because it's almost 10 in the morning
Did you go to Fat Tommy's? Did you go to Fat Tommy's and get a Ditka?
I don't actually eat like that. I could, if I ate like that, I would need to run like 2 hours a day. But I made some delicious grilled fish a couple nights ago. And so just now I took a little tortilla. I'm doing a low carb tortilla, fried it up in some olive oil, added some red snapper, some vinegar, coleslaw with poppy seeds, cilantro, a little tartar sauce, rolled it up. It was delicious. That's what I basically just had for breakfast.
A fish taco with tartar sauce. Awesome. I guess
I tried to make it sound more elegant.
No, okay? you couldn't leave. You had to, like, you look, we're both Southsiders. We have to, you know, there's certain things we need to live. And what, like, for you, it's tartar sauce on your fish taco. For me, it's ketchup on my grilled cheese, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, brother. Do you dip it? You have to at least dip it. You don't put it on the grilled cheese, I hope.
No, I dip it. And then I have a cup of Campbell's tomato soup. And I watch Bozo's Circus.
And then you roll out your mat and you take your nap with the other kindergartners around 10:30.
Exactly. I wish. You know, I guess the one thing about retirement, although I'm not really retired, is I feel sorry for the spouses, you know, because we have more time, although I don't, but more time to be home and get in their way. You know what I mean? So how are your kids handling mom, Uber mom, as you were calling yourself, driving them around, but also you're more focused on them now. So that must be a pain for them, poor kids.
I know. Honestly, my son has gotten to a point where, like, he only answers about half of my questions because I ask too many. But I also think, and I'm sure there are parents out there who feel this way as well, but the whole COVID experience has made, you know, since we're home more, my kids are not as independent as they used to be. And I just this morning, you know, normally I would be at work and my husband would be at work and they would come home from school and they were in charge of doing their own homework and they were starting to learn how to do laundry. And, you know, if there was a soccer game, they had to get their bag together. And now that I'm here, I'm doing all that. Oh, your socks are here and here's your jersey and here's your shorts. And would you like a snack? And I made ice cubes with lemon so that it's really refreshing when you have your, you know, I mean, this has got to end at some point, or I'm going to be raising a couple of ninnies, because that's what happens. They become more dependent on you. My kids were learning how to take, you know, the city bus. Yeah. Now I'm here driving them everywhere. So it's a little, you know, pros and cons.
Well, at least you can, I would assume that the alderman, the mayor, the governor of Illinois, and other political figures appreciate the fact that you are now no longer, you know, sending them emails like, what did you mean by this? What did you?
I'm guessing that there were no tears when I left journalism. I'm pretty sure that's the case. And in fact, there is a group that has been talking to me and wants to talk to you and wants to talk to people who left the paper, a financier who would like to start some sort of a more balanced online news site. I don't know that that's going to come together, but I think readers crave more, you know, diversity of opinion that they're not getting.
Clearly.
And just, you know, more holding our elected officials accountable, which they're also not necessarily getting to the degree that they would, just because so many journalists have left the field. So that is a possibility. I think these startup enterprises have happened in the past, and I worked at one, and it's just hard to get people off of their habits. So I don't know that it will come together, but I have been approached about that.
Well, I have some news, journalism news. May I break it here?
You may. It's your show.
I tried to send you an email, and I guess I got in the group of writers that that must remain secret. And I think I wrote your email down wrong, so it bounced. But the others have it now. Just before we sat down into the podcast, there is a guest columnist, first time on johncastnews.com, and someone writing about the let me get the title. It's A Struggle for the Soul of Michigan Avenue. And let me get an operative line. The new neighborhood sport is threat assessment. The fast-walking office workers and hospital nurses in scrubs eyeball those around them more than before. A cop who isn't new to the beat muses that out here, you can't tell which mask is protective, which one a disguise. Kristen McQuarrie, can you tell by the style, even though my Alistair Cook reading voice is rusty, who wrote that piece?
I mean, it sounds like someone who actually did some on-the-street reporting downtown. Hmm.
Yes. All right, I'll save you. His name, you know him. And others of you have been invited to guest column, although like Wimpy, you know, the cheeseburger addict, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today because we're just about to monetize the new site. His name, he's from Iowa. He grew up in beautiful Iowa. He came to Chicago years and years ago. He's a friend of ours. His name is John.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
John P. McCormick, the former editorial board editor, predecessor at the Chicago Tribune. So I hope you like it, and I hope you'll consider, as I've invited others to consider, writing for it, because I want other ideas, you know, not necessarily my own all the time. I want other ideas out there. But to ask, I'm sorry, Jeff, it's not the chair squeaking, that's Zeus, Zeus the Wonder Dog. I'd like
Zeus.
To
ask both.
Yeah. He's in his spot next to my chair, but now he's
he's grumbling. I hear it.
He wants something that ends in, we have to spell stuff out, like WALK or FOOD. It's like we're spelling stuff out so he doesn't hear us. Anyway, something's going on in the city, and I wonder if news organizations are actively getting to it, Kristen, and that is the crime, and in my view, perhaps I'm wrong, but lack of prosecution of that crime, which degrades public order even more. Do you think that, am I off base, Jeff and Kristen, to suggest that there might be other ways to handle this? I know the Tribune did a great piece a week or so ago about the cases that are the felony cases dropped by Kim Fox. And the Sun-Times did a good piece on the shooter, alleged killer of Ella French, the police officer who should have been in jail and walked on some bond issue. Are we doing enough? Because I know that without, you know, I don't want to criticize people, but I'm just saying in general, is the news of Chicago doing enough on this important issue? Or maybe too much? What do you guys think?
I think it's being, there should be a more outside the box way of covering crime. We're we're contributing to the numbness that allows this to continue to happen among the electorate by just reporting every Monday or Friday numbers, you know, treating human beings and tragedies as numbers that go up and down, comparing them to the previous year. Little nuggets about where and when something happened and the age of the victim, you know, a bulleted countdown of people killed over the weekend. I don't know necessarily what the better way is. I think often about just how all those concentric circles of violence include doctors and nurses and emergency workers just completely overwhelmed every single weekend. They have to be with gunshot victims. And just maybe more storytelling of those people and revisiting, you know, we wrote a lot about Ella French. I went to a memorial service for her. She'll be forgotten in many ways. And so then do we revisit the pain of the mother in 6 months or the fact that she's not at the Thanksgiving table? And I don't know that more storytelling would kind of break through that shell that I feel Chicagoans have, we're just living in. But just reporting numbers to me is a very ineffective way at getting at the story.
I don't think there is another way to go about it, because I think we've tried that. I think that, you know, people seek out, especially in the days, you know, this modern era where news is filtered through our, you know, our likes and what we click, and we're given things more and more of what we are seeking. And most people aren't seeking out the sad stories, aren't seeking out the bad coverage. You know, they click on the Rachel Ray stories of the world and stuff like that, that we've built a system that has completely degraded the power of journalism to a point where, you know, we're stuck in our own little echo chambers by everything. Because, like, even the story we were talking about, the idea that John wrote about the ornament thing and you can't find it. Like, yeah, that's hit. It's buried in the internet now because it's beyond of interest anymore. And I don't think even telling those stories, because people aren't going to find them, and the people aren't going to, they're going to ignore them, or they're going to move past them quickly. And there's so much of it out there that it would just be this wave of depressing content that people would not want or would not seek out, because life is tough already as it is. And I don't think there is any mechanism in this city to hold people, elected officials, accountable for these things anymore, because they have walled themselves off behind phalanxes of media people and comms teams and things like that, and adjusting their messages and putting out stories timed and keyworded specifically to rise above other stuff, that you can outthink the zeitgeist and get ahead of everything and keep the status quo in check. That's just how I feel, and seeing both sides of it from a consumer and someone who creates stuff for a living.
Kristen?
Yeah, I mean, the lack of accountability of public officials is pretty startling. We can't have police officers on every single street corner, but these are our leaders. These are the people we elect. And we have been living in this cyclone for the past, you know, 7, 8, 9 years of Tom Dart's office blaming Kim Fox's office, blaming Tim Evans, the judge, then the mayor, blaming all of the above, and the police department, blaming prosecutors for not charging. I mean, we wrote a couple editorials, like, just where you just want to put your hands on their shoulders and shake them and say, get into a room and figure this out. I mean, it's just, it's insane that politics and messaging and all of that, and relationships and people getting their feelings hurt, seems to just dominate over, you know, the quality of life in the city and life. You know, we're losing children, we're losing, and this has been going on for years. So there are days where I just don't even want to talk about it. And you're right, Jeff, I don't want to read about it. There's nothing new here. At the same time, it's only a, you know, the city is not growing at nearly the pace it should be growing. Parts of the city are just completely hollowed out. And then you have this spread of just, you know, you can't even go to a White Sox game and watch some baseball for a charity event. And on the way home, a bullet comes through your headlight of your car while your husband is driving, and you slump over in the front seat and die on the way to the hospital. I mean, these are things that are just completely unacceptable, and we don't seem to connect the dots much in this city.
I think we do. I think that, I mean, I don't think media does. I think a lot of it has to do with reticence to hold Kim Fox and Lightfoot and Evans accountable for the way they're playing with the bond system and the electronic monitoring. But it clearly cuts the issues clearly cut through the noise, because Betty and I are going to the Sox game, and we're wondering which one, what do we take, the Ryan or the Eisenhower? You know, which is the one that we won't get shot.
You're better off getting an armored vehicle. I mean,
yeah, but the Taliban have all those over there, you know, so we're kind of short.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, to your point, one of the things that I've heard lately, and you know, the politics aside on it, is that, you know, the city talks about the guns, and we're pulling guns off the street and all the gun violence. And yet, if there weren't guns on the street, there wouldn't be shootings. And yeah, that makes sense. So where is the disconnect then that we say, well, if you have a gun and you commit any crime, it should be a severe punishment, because that's the problem. That's what we know. If we could control in any way, that would be it. But we say, well, you had a gun, but you've never had any arrests before, so why don't you go home and think about what you did, and hopefully you'll come back in 6 months and we can talk about it. I mean, that's essentially what the courts are doing. So that's the disconnect. The disconnect is that people don't want to lock people up for having a gun and committing a crime. Why? There's no one can answer that question.
I know. And they've tried. I mean, a few years ago, the answer was going to be stiffer penalties for unlawful use of a weapon. And Eddie Johnson at the time, the police superintendent, was able to convince the Black Caucus in Springfield to actually pass that bill. Has it made a lick of difference? No. And there are entities on Twitter that do a better job of explaining what happens in bond court than the newspapers do, or the television stations, or the radio reporters. I mean, every time someone is released on electronic monitoring, or like you're saying, you know, committed a violent act, but they're bonding out, the name of the judge should be in the paper, the circumstances, you know, those should be the stories we're seeing every day, so that there's more connecting of the dots and actually holding individual judges accountable. They're elected. I mean, these are elected officials too, and I don't think there's enough exposure there as well.
Kristen, I agree with you, but I don't see that connection, that those strings being pulled, those threads. You know where I see them? I don't see it on TV. I don't hear it on radio. I don't see it in the newspapers. I see it at CWB. I go there to find out, you know, on a daily basis, how many dozens and dozens and dozens of violent criminals with gangbangers with a past of shooting guns and hurting people are let out on bond early, easy, are let out on electronic monitoring, and then they commit other violent crimes. It happens over and over. And I don't see the papers, either of them, or generally news covering this. And I would think if you talk to the financier again, I would, you know, as a city, if I were city editor, I'd be like, get me that story. Why don't we have that story? I'd be freaking out. I'd, you know, with my sleeves rolled up and a cigarette hanging from my lips and my fedora on, I'd be screaming for copy boys to get me the CWB copy.
And, you know, the big difference between a lot of those things and CWB is that CWB isn't a commercial enterprise. So there's no committing or trying to keep a bottom line in check. And, you know, that they're only there to cover it, to give it attention. And it used to be that was the idea, right? You know, we were there, the journalists were there to cover it, to make sure the right things are happening in the right places. But I hate to sound like a broken record. I do it all the time, but we've built our commerce around the idea of, well, you know, we really don't care about the stuff that's important. We just care about the stuff that sells. And I don't know how we fix that.
Yeah, but I thought Kristen was going to say something. I said my piece.
No, I really don't have anything else to say. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I remember, John, you and I talking about CWB because you wanted to use them, you know, in columns and link to them and explain to them. And I said, okay, I mean, I didn't see any like fact checking of them that was wrong. People didn't like it. I think there's a hesitancy, a healthy hesitancy to quote from Twitter, kind of what seems to be like an anonymous person. But this is clearly someone sitting in bond court. And I know his name is out there and there have been things written about him, but sitting in bond court and reporting exactly what's happening and doing a better job of it and connecting more dots than actual press pass journalists seem to be doing. And maybe there's just not a desire to do that. I don't know. It takes a lot of elbow grease to do that kind of stuff, to fact check records. And, you know, prosecutors get things wrong all the time in court. It happens. But yeah. I remember saying to you, go ahead. I can't find a reason to not use that as a source.
I don't remember the exact column, but I clearly it was on the subject that we were talking about. And I emailed and reached out to the chief judge and to all the other players to ask them, is this report inaccurate? And none of them would tell me it was inaccurate. So it just boggles me that that what's important to the people of Chicago and to Illinois, I think, according to the polls, is violent crime. It's clearly important to Lori Lightfoot and Kim Fox, and demonizing the police is one political response, but I don't think the majority of the people like that. And I don't know. That's where we are now. So on that depressing note, can we talk about some positives? Like, okay, give me a happy story, somebody.
Let's see.
And not the, okay, tell us the inside of when you do the Dan Proft show. And I've heard you on there. You're very good at it. And you're good at radio. He was teasing the story that I couldn't believe.
No, you're not going to go here. Are you?
Are the fish?
You're
okay.
I'm not doing that twice.
All right. But I just wanted to ask you. Okay. Let's strike the. Jeff is not going to cut this out because he knows where
he know what we're talking about? Yes. So
yes,
occasionally
he does.
Dan Proft tries to end the show on like a light, funny note. Not always. Light and funny is not how you would describe his show. But he will kind of shock you with. And when you walk in there, if any of your listeners listen to Chicago's Morning Answer, it's a 5 to 9 a.m. show, and he pulls, I mean, one of the things that I like about Dan's show is he pulls a ton of audio, and you don't have time, I think, to do that on as many shows as he does and for as long as he does. But so he's got tons of audio that you're supposed to listen to, and probably, I don't know, 50 news clips, some of them very long, that he wants to get to. Of course, you don't get to all of them. But so buried in one of those news clips can be something sort of, you know, sophomoric, I would say. And,
a kicker.
Yes, he'll kind of spring it on you. So yes, there's a fish in Florida that has a shape that looks like a certain thing, and
very phallic. I know the story.
I had about 30 seconds that he threw it at me. So yeah, it happens. He also walks into the studio, as you know, John, about 10 seconds before you go live. So you're standing with your headphones on, your papers, right, and you're just not even sure if you're going to have to open the show by yourself or if he's going to show up or.
Yeah, I enjoy Dan. He's, you know, I worked with him before. I produced his show when he was over at LS with the good, great Pete Zimmerman.
Right.
And there was one morning where the show started at 4 and it was 4:15 and there was no Dan. I'm calling over to his apartment building and had the doorman, you know, say, hey, can you go up to his apartment to knock on the door? And knocking on the door. We've been calling him. Finally, the doorman gets him up and he's like, oh, I'll be there. And he comes flying in. And I mean, it's really more a testament to his acumen and his witticism and his ability to intellectually talk about things. Because I don't think many people could wake up and be on air in less than 20 minutes and be as intellectual as Dan is. So always a hat tip to him, even if we don't agree on everything.
I think the thing that I like about what he does, what conversations with Charles Lipson, conversations with Kristen and you, conversations with Bruce Dold and John McCormick and all that old crew and others, is the idea of pulling threads, the idea of pulling the thread of an idea, toying with it, teasing it, turning it up and down. That's important. And it's important to me personally. It's like my oxygen. And so I miss that, Kristen. I miss that from you, man. I do. I'm just telling you.
I've got a couple columns kicking around in my head. I don't know what I would do with them, except for johncastnews.com. But it never really leaves you. And you read something and, you know, and this isn't to blame the current reporters or editors at any of the newspapers, but there's like a glaring hole that only you would know because you covered this exact story in Springfield in 1996. You know what I mean? There's just, I do read stories and feel that there's just some authoritative voice that's missing. And it makes sense. A lot of the older, more experienced journalists have left.
Well, you're always welcome. And before we go, I want to ask you, do you think Lori Lightfoot's going to run for re-election?
That's a good question. I do. I do. And I think as bad as things are going, all of the politicians who steered the ship during COVID have that big, they're going to get a lot of benefit of the doubt because of that. And I think that's the only way she could be reelected because I don't see what else she can really run on. But I think there's especially in Chicago, there's a softness for her because she'd had to deal with the unpredictable. And that's the only thing that would kind of drag her over the finish line.
Do you see Tony Preckwinkel running for reelection? Because I do.
I think so, too. I don't think she's going to make another run for mayor. I think the only way that we would get possibly a completely breath of fresh air new mayor would be if the field stays very small, because we had 10 mayoral candidates the first time around in 2019.
No Bill Daley's, no Jeremiah Joyce kids. That's my rule.
You had them, but then you also had the person that Chance the Rapper endorsed, who I'm forgetting about, Gary McCarthy, Paul Vallis. You just had, they split the pie in too many different directions. And so there needs to be just one or two very strong alternatives to the incumbent in order to possibly bring change. Otherwise, if it ends up being a crowded field again, the two top vote getters will get into the runoff with, 19% of the vote. That's not exactly what you want as a Chicago voter.
One of my favorite shows when I was a kid was on TV. It was about a white basketball coach coaching the black kids they turned into a great team, and it was a weekly drama, and it dealt with all these issues, urban issues and race and friendship and love and teamwork. It was called The White Shadow. And I referred to, although I don't think Arne Duncan is any inspiring character, I referred to him in the podcast or in a column as the candidate that the Obama machine is building up, and he's got stories in the Tribune and on TV and CBS, et cetera, talking about how great he is. I think some of them handled by Peter Cunningham. If I had written the White Shadow and Arne Duncan, would you have called me and said, "What are you doing? You can't write this," or would you have allowed it?
If you would have called him the Shadow?
The White Shadow, yeah, isn't he? He's the White Shadow.
I mean, I don't see anything terribly offensive about it if it's about the show. I don't know, John. Maybe. I took things out of your columns that I felt were going to detract. And again, this would be like a phrase or a word or a sentence.
Right.
Because we would argue. Sometimes in this world, you are just a sentence away from, being canceled. And not that we can write and tiptoe and be afraid, but you also don't want the whole point of a column to be lost on a sentence or a turn of phrase. And yes. So sometimes there's just a better way to say something where you can still be punchy and tough and funny and biting and sarcastic, but it's just a better way to say
That's why everyone needs editors.
I'd recommend you call him Ted Lasso. That would have been my recommendation.
Oh, Ted Lasso.
Oh God. Did Ted Lasso play defense and pass the ball to Obama and set a pick so he could score against people when they played basketball?
I'm pretty sure Jason Sudeikis was at some Obama birthday at some point in his life. So I'd say that's a close enough connection.
Well, I hope we do this again. Kristen, it's been far too long, and I just want to say that people in Chicago miss your voice, and I know they miss your voice, and they miss your ability to bring all these things together into one package that they need to hear, whether they like it or not. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kristen.
For Kristen McQuarrie, former editor of the Chicago Tribune editorial page, now seeking a new line of work. And I hope she finds it, and she will find it. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, co-host here for many years, my friend, Master Baker. And for me, John Cass, editor, publisher, and bottle washer at johncassnews.com. Thanks for being here, everybody. And find us next time on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.